If you look at stocks against gold now, I think stocks will decline against gold by more than 95% in coming years. And silver will be poor man's gold. Silver will also go up dramatically, probably faster than gold, or probably twice as fast as gold.
Welcome to Thoughtful Money. I'm Thoughtful Money founder and your host, Adam Taggart. Well, as you can see, I'm still on vacation, folks, but I wanted to make sure that you had a video to watch while I was still wrapping up my time here. There's a video I recorded a few months back that hasn't seen the light of day until now. It's with Egon von Greyers, one of the greats in terms of understanding the precious metals market. He's the founder of vongreyers.gold, which until very recently was called goldswitzerland.com. He's Matt Pippenberg's business partner, and you all have seen Matt on this channel several times. This video hasn't appeared until now because of the circumstances that it was filmed under. I had just come back from the death of my father, and on that flight back, I caught COVID. And so I was interviewing Egon here while I was in the throes of COVID. And sort of as a result of that, a result of me having to then, as soon as I got over COVID, having to focus on passing a securities exam, this video just never got the proper editing it deserved. I've now had time to do that. And so I'm making that available to you here. The content of the video is actually even more relevant today versus when it was recorded because of the historic price that gold has now risen to in the ensuing couple of months. So without further ado, please enjoy this interview with the great Egon von Greyers.
Egon, thank you so much for joining us today, all the way from Switzerland.
All the way from Switzerland. Yeah, great to be on your show. Thank you very much. And you know, I have to give credit to you. You've done extremely well, and I wish you all the best in your on your new channel also. I know you're doing well already, so very well.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And one sign that we're doing well at this early stage is that we've landed Egon von Greyers on the channel. I can't wait to watch the interview with him. It's apparently going to be a great one.
Thank
so,
you.
Well, kicking things off here, look, I've had your colleague there, Matthew Pippenberg, on the channel. I've actually interviewed him several times this year. They've been several of, I think, the most popular interviews we've had because Matt's such a well-spoken guy, but also in part two to the work that you two do there at Gold Switzerland. As I mentioned in the intro here, I would like to delve into your area of expertise, which is gold. Like I said, it's had a really actually impressive run over the past 2 years. It looks like it may have a continued run going forward from here. Before we get into the specifics of that, though, I'd like to talk a bit about your macro outlook, how you sort of see the world. And if we can start with the general question I like to ask all my guests at the very beginning, what's your current assessment of the global economy and financial markets?
Well, Adam, that's a very good question for me because, you know, my whole life has consisted of trying to understand risk and protect against risk. Whether that's been in banking where I started or corporate life where I was vice chairman of a major retail company, the biggest consumer electronics retailer in the UK. Then, of course, in my own investment activities, I always focused on the risk and on the downside, because if you understand the downside risk, we all know that the upside takes care of itself. So, and I already at the end of the 90s, I decided that this is not going to end well. And I saw debt building up. I saw, obviously, derivatives building up also. At levels already then, which I thought were unsustainable, and then of course we had the tech stock run also, which actually I was very concerned about also, and I was involved with a tech company, and told my partner we should sell. We did sell at the beginning of 2000, and the people who bought it went bust like everybody else. Companies were going at 10 times sales with no profits. So you know, those kind of risks I always understood and focused on. And of course, then we had this 2006-9 problem also in the world. And all that has happened since then is just unlimited credit creation. And that's what kept the world going and GDP increasing. Real GDP hasn't increased for years. And the financial system now is a massive bubble. Stock markets are in a bubble. The economy is only being kept up by excessive credit, which is, of course, fake money. And I think that, you know, you can never, forecasting is a mug's game. And to be forecast a specific time or date serves no purpose. So instead, we look at risk. And to me, the risk is now excessive, has been for a while. You never know when things are going to happen. And you know, our whole really strategy or vision has been to protect against this risk. Probably has to do with my age also. When you're young, you trade, you invest, and you're active. At this point, I think, and especially now, at this, where the world is now, I think wealth preservation is becoming absolutely essential, because I think the world economy, markets, and asset prices are going to collapse. As simple as that. Whether that happens in 2024, I don't know, and I don't care. Because the risk is that it will do, and I think there's a high chance, but it doesn't matter. I think the most important thing is to protect against that risk and not worry about the day it happens. We know one thing for certain, that you can't buy your fire insurance when the fire has started, so you've got to protect now. And I think people who are going to stay in these bubble markets are going to have a shock. Well, whether that happens in 24, as I said, we will know afterwards. But I think the risk is high, and therefore I think now is the time to protect your assets rather than to try to make money. You know, as Richard Russell said, you know, the people who in the market we're going to see in the next few years, people who lose the least are the winners, because there are not going to be many people who make a lot of money. That's absolutely certain in my view. So that's my view looking from above. You could say a bit pessimistic, but I'm not a pessimist at all. I love life. I love being active in business. I love people. But I don't think that the euphoric era we've had now for at least 20 years, or you can say 50 years too, since 1971, that is over. And we are seeing the very final stages of that in markets also, in my view. So I think we better be careful. And then we haven't even touched upon the geopolitical side. To me, that is looking extremely dangerous now also. And that includes not just the various wars we have, but also the migration and you know, therefore internal problems in many countries. And possibly major conflicts between the East and the West, but Arab and Muslim countries and the West, because what's starting in the Middle East now in Israel is very, very dangerous, because that could easily spread to something much, much bigger. So those are some of the risks, and they're big enough. I think that the risk is now bigger than ever in history, because this is global. The economic risk is global in virtually every major economy, and the geopolitical risk is also now major. So that's my outlook. Not very happy, but we have to deal with the situation as it is, not as we hope it to be.
Okay. Well, you started right in the thick of where I wanted to bring things. So why don't we just really delve into this, and then we'll get into sort of the potential solution side or actions to take side in a bit. You had made a recent quote that I was going to read, but you pretty much just walked through your main points from it. I just want to note that you said this is one of the most precarious times in history, from the quote I'm pulling from. You said financially, socially, politically, and geopolitically, right? And you mentioned several of those risks right there. One risk you didn't mention yet, and I'm just curious to get your thoughts on, is the social side of things. So I get that you feel financially, we kind of have a terminal patient on the table that is being kept alive by this excessive credit creation right now. Geopolitically, you talked about, you know, the fracturing risks that we've all seen over the past couple of years becoming more alarming. Socially, I'm curious to hear sort of where you see the biggest fault lines, but one I'll just highlight for you to react to is it seems that we have an increasing acceleration, at least in most of the Western economies, where more and more of the prosperity is being concentrated in a smaller and smaller group, you know, sort of an elite class, and the average person is getting more and more squeezed and seeing their prospects diminish, which doesn't seem like a good recipe for anything other than at some point, you know, real civil strife. So anyways, I'm curious, when you talked about socially here, what are some of the factors that have your attention and concerns the most?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. The social side is extremely dangerous, what we're looking at now. The gap between the rich and the poor hasn't been as great as this for decades, if not more. I won't say a century, but it's been a very long time that we saw this kind of gap, and that never ends well. That always ends in some kind of revolution. You know, that doesn't mean revolution, people who take to arms. But if you take the social unrest due to poverty, which will happen, and then add to that the fact that in virtually every country in Europe and in North America, we now have a major immigration problem. And, you know, that's not the immigrants' fault. If you take Germany or Sweden or UK, I mean, a lot of these countries have just opened their arms to more people than they can take care of. Therefore, if you open your borders like Germany had, Sweden has, etc., for people, and you don't have schools, you don't have a training program for them, you can't even teach them the language, you don't have jobs for them, then, you know, what can they do? Well, a percentage always then obviously finds that crime is a very, very, very useful way of actually making a living. Now, that's a minority, but that minority is making a major impression on the whole country. You take Sweden, for example, now, which was the most peaceful country in the world. I grew up, I was born there. I'm Swiss and Swedish, but I was born in Sweden. It was the most peaceful country ever. And now, sadly, the immigration situation has created drug gangs that are shooting people on a daily basis. It is one of the worst countries in Europe now. So, you know, and in America, we're going to see the same thing. You know, you just see what's happening at the Mexican border there. You know, they're just the masses that are coming in from all over the world. And that will create unrest also. And of course, when you have this then disparity between the rich and the poor, people will blame the poor or blame the immigrants. And you know, it's not by accident that you have parties like in Holland now, the Wilders, who's anti-immigration, anti everything that's happening in society today. And he's, you know, he was now the majority, won the majority of the Dutch, not absolute the majority, he was the biggest party in Holland. And we are going to see the more and more right-wing parties. You know, you take Milei in Argentina, this is the same thing. We're going to see more of that, and that in itself will create, you know, sadly, you know, more of Nazi parties will grow, and they will be also obviously anti-immigration, and that will create social unrest in itself between the various sections of society. Plus, as I said, and as you started with, the difference between the rich and the poor also. So the social unrest will be at so many different levels. So that is a real concern. And I think that will obviously take years to develop because it's not going to happen overnight. But at the same time, we know that if riots start, and they go not just throughout the whole country as a wildfire, but they also go across borders also. And there's a risk of that in the next few years. So you're right. We have the combination of all the geopolitical and the financial problems, and then we have also the social one. Yes, we could. I mean, I don't want to be a pessimist. I want to see look at life from a positive aspect. But if you look at the risks, they are, as we started with earlier, they are bigger than ever in history, as far as I know, on a global basis.
Okay, and I think you know, there's being pessimistic, there's being overly optimistic, and then I think there's being realistic. I get the sense, Egon, that you were trying to be a realist through all this. One quick aside, I just want to take for 1 second here for my audience, Egon, is I do actually want to talk more about the topic of immigration in 2024 for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned. It's an emotionally charged topic. It's one that at least in the States, we have a hard time having a dialogue around because issues of class and race get thrown into it really quickly. But it is a very real issue. And it's one that here in the States, and I sense also in a lot of other, especially Western countries, there doesn't seem to be much of a coordinated strategy around. I would say probably the biggest part of our border strategy, the biggest issue with our border strategy is we just don't seem to have one right now. And we, you know, there's a lot of issues wrapped up in it. You know, what sort of social services can we offer our citizens? How do we offer that if our citizenry is increasing at a faster rate than we're planning for? We actually have a pretty big underemployment problem in the U.S., where we have over 100 million working age adults who are classified as not in the labor force. So we should be probably figuring out how to activate that labor force before we bring in too many more other people that we don't necessarily yet have a plan for how to employ. So it is a very thorny issue emotionally and otherwise. But I think to not talk about it is to, you know, the way to plan to fail is to fail to plan, right? If we just ignore the problem, it's only going to get worse. So my ask here of our viewers right now is, if you are interested in having more discussions on this topic here in this channel, let me know in the comments section below. But my ask of you, of the viewers, is if we do indeed proceed with that, that the agreement between all of us here is that we're going to have a very intellectual and hopefully emotionally impartial discussion around it, and try to do it in an adult-sized way, where this can be one of those channels where we can actually address this topic without, you know, spiraling out of control on a lot of the charged emotion that so often comes along with it. All right, so Egon. So I want to get through this topic to the optimistic part of the story, but to get there, we have to get into, you know, really what you sort of expect could be coming. And so I know you say timing it is a mug's game, and I agree with that. Sort of like, it's like watching, you know, the old experiments where you pile sand up, right? Is the higher the pile gets, you can't predict when it's going to collapse, but you can predict the probability of collapse gets higher, the higher the sand pile gets, right? Mm-hmm. So from a financial standpoint, you know, I've talked a lot again with your colleague, Matthew Pippenberg. We've talked about the debt issue that you've raised. And I think one of the things that I clearly get from Matt is that, you know, history is pretty clear on what happens when countries overissue debt and then the economy begins to live in service of that debt. And essentially what happens is it begins to become a bit of a vicious cycle, but at the end of it, the currency is always sacrificed in service of the debt. And I presume that's one reason why you're so involved in gold, is that for you is a protection against that, right? So one of the things I think you see financially is a, if not a destruction of the fiat currencies, at least a dramatic weakening of them in terms of purchasing power. So that's one of the things you see coming, I believe. Correct me if that's wrong. What else do you see coming as a mix of this risk soup that we've been discussing here?
Well, you know, if we step back a bit and look at, you know, the eras that we go through in history, and, you know, whether we call it the fourth turning, which is a popular term, or whether we call it just a coming depression, those are inevitable, these cycles. They are exacerbated by the ineptitude of governments in dealing with them. And the problem is that at the end of these eras, you get the worst kind of governments always. Leaders are instruments of their time. And now we are in a time where we have, you know, decadence, where we're living on debt, where you know, the kernel of society, the families in most Western countries is breaking up. You know, there's so many one-parent families or you know, children who maybe have no parents looking after them. So we are now in an era which, as I said, sadly, this is not the time for strong leaders to come in. My view is that we now need to see a proper forest fire. The debt situation that we have can never be repaired, ever. There is no chance that, you know, the U.S. federal debt, the private debt, the 100 trillion total debt in the U.S. as an example, or the 330 trillion global debt, plus derivatives, which is a quasi debt, and nobody knows how big they are because you have the shadow banking system, but they could easily be a couple of quadrillion in my expectation. And that couple of quadrillion could easily become real debt one day when central banks have to try to save the banking system by giving the bank support for these enormous derivative portfolios that they're carrying. Therefore, you know, it's hard to be optimistic about this era. I think we have to go through this now, and we have to go through this in a way that we need that forest fire. We need a collapse. I don't see any other solution. There is no, we cannot, whatever they make up in fake money and new monetary systems and digital currency, et cetera, there's nothing. You cannot create prosperity out of thin air. And that's what they're trying to do. And therefore, the printing will just lead to the final collapse, which is inevitable and has always happened in history. You know, currencies don't just decline. They go to zero every time. Every time in history, there's no currency in history that has ever survived. Remember that. All currencies have gone to zero. And we have now seen an era since 1971 when every single currency has gone down between 97 and 99%. And I'm measuring that in gold terms, of course, because gold is the only stable purchasing power. And therefore, the only money that has ever survived in history. So we have to go through this final, no, there was, as I said, 97 to 99% down. We have to go through the final 1% to 3% collapse of the currency system. And with that, will also the debt system collapse also. There's no chance of surviving. No debts will ever be repaid. As I said, federal debt, banking debt, to private debt, nothing will be repaid. No one can afford to repay. We're just increasing it exponentially now. And I've mentioned in an article, in an interview a couple of times, and, you know, what happens with exponential moves. I've taken the example of a stadium that is being filled with water. One drop the first minute, two drops the second, four, eight, seven, doubles every minute. And it takes about 50 minutes for the stadium to fill full by just one drop, two drops, four drops, et cetera. But what is interesting is that after 45 minutes, if you ask people how full do you think the pool is or the stadium is, Well, nobody guesses, but it's actually only 7% full after 45 minutes. So it's in the last 5 minutes, it goes from 7% full to 100% full. And I think that's where we are now. And therefore, we can see now how debt now goes up exponentially. And, you know, I forecast when Trump was elected, I said that, you know, debt will be within, at the 8 years later, the debt will be 40 trillion. I said it was 20 then when he took over. And so we're not going to, at the end of this year, we might be just under 40 trillion, but that's, you know, an easy one. And because debt basically in the US on average doubles every 8 years, federal debt. That takes us to 100 trillion in 2036, 100 trillion debt. And let us say that I believe that interest rates can also be higher. I think they're going up again. They're 10%, which is not unusual in history. I remember 20% on my, or 21% of my first mortgage in the UK in 1973. So, you know, we say 10% interest on 100 trillion debt for the US. And that's going to be bankruptcy, only that. So, you know, we have to, it won't work. You can't write off debt, because if you write off debt, you have to, the assets that the debt is backing will also go to zero. So therefore, this has to collapse the system, whether we like it or not. We have to get down to much lower level and then start to grow from there with a sound growth. And it's only at that point the good leaders come in. Now I will go back to, you know, what can be done. And we're not going to have any good leaders now. There's not a single statesman in the world right now, certainly not in the West. You know, we could argue that Putin is the biggest statement, but he's hated by anyone. So just mentioning his name means that, you know, nobody will agree with that. But certainly there is not a single statement in the West. And sadly, you take the biggest economy in the world and until now, the mightiest, the US, doesn't have a leader today who leads the country. It's very sad. You know, we're all going to get old. You know, I'm not much younger than Biden. But I just hope that my wife or my colleagues will tell me this. You know, we've had enough of you now. You know, you're talking nonsense, and they kick me out this is what I'm saying. There's a lack of leadership, and I don't see this ending well. I don't see anyone. You know, you look at one president builds a wall, the other one tears it down and opens it up. You know, it's typical. There's no consistency anywhere. And as we said, countries. The migration, we talked about it, but you know, countries have no policy for anything, including migration. That there's absolutely, you know, the countries are leaderless, and therefore there is no chance, in my view, to have an orderly restructuring of the world economy or the world political situation. I mean, you just take the war, the war's going on now. Why is no one trying to start peace talks? Only the US, which is still not for long, I think, the mightiest country in the world militarily, but I think that's already slowly or quickly evaporating. But you know, but somebody should start these peace negotiations, but nobody's interested. Oh, you know, the world wants more. The people who are pulling the strings of Biden, they want more war. And they were, as we know, this is a war of the US against Russia, not the US, not Ukraine against Russia, and the same in Israel. So you know, sadly, but there's not a leader who actually can take the lead here and do something about it. And that's why it's going to end badly. All of this will end badly. You know, geopolitically, I'm quite worried about the situation. As well, and then financially or economically, we're also, as I said, there's no solution. No one's coming up with a solution because there is no solution on the economic side. So therefore, I just see that we have to go through this very, very, very serious downturn or collapse, if you want. It's a horrible word, word collapse, but that's the only solution. That's the only basis on which we can actually then create the green shoots again, and then, you know, just like we got Thatcher and Reagan in the early 1980s, you know, at that point, when we're at the bottom, that's when strong leaders will come in again. So in the meantime, we will suffer, Adam. The world will suffer, in my view. And as I said, I'm not pessimistic generally as an individual, but, you know, the risk that I look at now, I don't see a solution to that. And that's very sad. Then we can come to the personal side, what we can do there, et cetera. We can discuss later. That's another matter, how we deal with it personally. But for the world, I don't quite see that there is a solution.
Okay. Well, Egon, you talked about a lot of things I want to touch on there, but the key takeaway from what you just said there is, you get to a point in a system, you know, you can, early enough in a system, you have lots of options, right? And if there's a problem brewing, you can change your behavior and perhaps avoid the problem. But then there's an event horizon, right? Where if you haven't changed your behavior or trajectory, you get to a certain point of progression where you've passed the event horizon and you now no longer can avoid the problem, right? The problem is going to happen. And so what you need to do is switch into management mode, which is, okay, if this is going to happen, what am I going to do about it? And you talked about exponentials. In my previous life, spent an awful lot of time in that world, dealt with that exact model of the exponential water dropper in the stadium that you talked about. So you're very right. In an exponential system, things speed up as time goes on, right? And so it's very critical to know when you're past the event horizon, because if you're wasting your time trying to avoid a problem that is inevitable at this point, it's time wasted. What you should be doing is spending your time on managing the outcome. Okay, if this is going to happen, how do I make sure I get least impacted by it, right? And what's interesting is your point about bad leadership and whatnot. Like, we're not having the discussion in many cases about whether we have a problem or not on so many of these issues. And in many of them, we're past the event horizon here. So there's a lot of kind of, you know, reshuffling of deck chairs on the Titanic, if you like, going on when the iceberg is looming ever closer here. So, you know, an important part of this discussion that we're about to get to is, okay, what can individuals do to make themselves less vulnerable to what might be coming down the road? But I do want to reiterate your important point that in that stadium, you know, when you can see the infield get covered with water, right? That's when you begin to realize you have a problem. But your point is that happened at minute 45. By minute 50, the stadium's already completely submerged, right? So in many cases, by the time the problem is actually visual, way too long to really do much about it. You know, you just got to get in hunker down mode. So I feel like that's sort of where we are. Last point on this, you talked about the lack of good leaders right now. You mentioned the fourth turning. I interviewed Neil Howe not that long ago, and I asked him specifically about this. You know, I said, look, there were plenty of other times in history where we faced challenges, and I can rattle off a lot of great names from history of leaders that emerged to help come up with a solution. I said, I look around right now, I'm not really seeing many leaders of that caliber. Did we just get a bum crop this time around? And he said, no, not really. He said, maybe this gives you a little optimism. He said, when the pressure gets great enough, they will get thrust to the forefront. So that's how it always works. And, you know, the pressure just hasn't gotten great enough yet for the great leaders who are going to carry us out of this to get identified yet. And I guess that's a two-edged sword, because it means things have to get worse before we see those people. But his confidence was pretty good that we'll eventually see them. They're just not, the conditions aren't yet bad enough to birth them yet. But anyway, so as we get into, you know, the fact that you said, look, the system is just going to have to collapse, break down, whatever, to the point where something better will emerge from it. So, of course, the breakdown is going to be really rough. I think you've given a good sense of sort of where you expect the pain to be felt most. I want to talk in just a moment about what people can do. But very quickly, let's stick with the financial side of things for a second. So let's say the currencies go to zero, the way that you said that has happened many times throughout history. What do you see replacing it? this time around. Do we go back to some sort of physical backed system? Do the new digital technologies play a role in some way, shape, or form? Is there something else that comes to the forefront? What do you see?
Well, there is no miracle cure for this. You know, the digital system that the world is talking about, it's just another form of fiat money and is no solution whatsoever. They will try that, you know, during this final collapse. They will try all kinds of funny money and say, no, well, you know, the old dollar debt is gone and we have now the new dollar, and that will solve everything. But it's just another form of printed money that cannot solve anything. You know, I disagree with, of course, new strong leaders will come up at some point, but I disagree with Neil Howe. They're not going to solve the problem. The world has never been, as far as I know, in a situation where globally every single major economy is indebted to the extent that they can never get out of it. China has a better chance of getting out of their debt situation because it's more domestic than for any other country, i.e. They're not borrowing across borders, so therefore they can settle it internally, but they will suffer like everybody else. So I don't think that there is a solution. I know I sound pessimistic, but you know, the fact is that no one should believe that this debt will ever be repaid, because it's impossible. And if it isn't repaid, the financial system and the world economy will collapse. It's as simple as that. Because you can't live on a debt mountain and eat the debt, because that's all there is to eat in the end, because we cannot afford anything else. But you know, it's like, let me just jump over to energy. We're also got to the end of an energy system. We are actually at peak energy, because the cost of producing the energy cost of producing energy is now so high that we actually have a declining return on energy, that which is also, you know, the world is actually prospering not from hard work or inventions that helps, but we have to have the energy, and no one should believe that getting rid of fossil fuels can ever solve the situation. 83% fossil fuels today the world is dependent on, and that's going to take a long, long time. And you know, all the alternative sources of energy, I hope that will happen, but it will take a lot longer than anybody believes. If you could replace fossil fuels by wind energy, for example, you know, then, you know, Daedalus and Icarus, the father and the son who created the, you know, who were flying and had some wax to attach the wings, and then got too close to the sun and crashed and died. You know, if wind energy would have worked already in those Greek mythology, you know, then they would have been billionaires already then. Wind energy, the problem is you can't store anything else but fossil fuel. Okay, we're getting out on a tangent, but what I'm saying is that on top of all the financial problems and the social problems and the political problem, we also have a major energy problem in the world that no one is talking about. But we are actually looking at peak energy. And I'm only talking about fossil fuels, because all the rest, as I said, will take a long, long time before it can actually replace fossil fuels, if that's ever possible. Sure, long, long term it may be possible, but there's nothing we see today except for nuclear energy that can replace fossil fuels. So therefore, you know, I think we are, I don't see any solutions for the world, and I don't see any new leaders who are going to come up with miracle solutions, and leaders in a democratic world, and you can question if we have a democracy today in Western countries, but leaders in democratic countries, they have one purpose, that's to be re-elected. And to be re-elected, they have to buy votes. And to buy votes, they have to spend money. And the only way now is by issuing more debt. because there is no money. You know, we don't have surpluses to spend. Every time every leader spends money today, sending money to Ukraine, sending money to Israel, et cetera, sending money to the poor, it's all printed money. We don't have the money. And a new leader is not going to be able to create that money either. And we're never, you know, remember, debt has gone from virtually nothing 50 years ago to, as I said, 300 trillion plus contingent liabilities plus derivatives, et cetera. So, you know, we're not going to ever go reduce that debt. So it has to implode. And there'll be no leader in the world who can ever, create a miracle and make all of that disappear and life goes on. I go on about this because, but it is, you know, nobody's focusing on the solution, and nobody will, because politically that's suicide. So everybody will have a solution. Every opposition leader will have a solution. And when he gets into power, he'll be as useless as the one who's running the country now. So, yeah, I don't want to be pessimistic, but that's to me, it's a fact. It's only a question of time. Things take longer than you expect, and you know, this could take much longer than we all expect. But at the same time, we are getting to that final, the final 5 minutes now in the world economy of that stadium being filled, and that can happen so quickly. So therefore, we could see now things accelerating starting in 2024, for example.
Okay, I'm going to return to my question and just ask it a slightly different way. I agree with everything that you've said. Also spent a fair amount of my time in the whole, net energy space as well. So I very much understand what you're talking about there. So let's play out the remaining 5 minutes. They have happened. We're at minute 50. Everything that was going to kind of break has broken, right? Presumably, as long as the planet is still here, it'll still rotate and the sun will come up in the morning. So currencies may be destroyed. Debt may have collapsed, right? What does come next? You know, putting on your realist but optimist hat, if you will, like what emerges after from this? What do you think are the more sustainable solutions that emerge from the rubble?
Okay. So, on currencies, of course, as we said before, since no currency has survived, there's always been a new currency coming out. In the meantime, people, depending on where and at what time in history, people go back to barter. It's possible that in the transition between the existing monetary system and the new one, we will have barter. It's possible that gold will play a role or silver also. But the problem is there are too few people who own gold and silver today for it to become a viable money for buying little things. So I would expect there'll be more of a barter system, and gold and silver will play a role, but not a major role for 8 billion people in the world. Because remember that the world financial assets, gold represents today only 0.5%, so it's not widely owned at all. So I think there will be some temporary money that always has been. When the Weimar Republic collapsed, they came out with the rental mark, the based on property values. So when the crisis starts, the governments will come up with new money. And then they will establish a new currency. And in the meantime, people will just manage by as I said, by bartering, by begging, by getting handouts or whatever. And then we will have new currency systems in most countries again. That's what happened always throughout history. So I don't see any difference now. But it's not going to be, I hope, I don't like having gold back currencies, because automatically that will lead to governments cheating, and I would rather have that gold was the gold was real gold, and not backing a currency, but still representing constant purchasing power. And governments, new governments, will not base a new system on debt. People will be so afraid of debt for the next 50 years, I promise you, because no one will, any new leader will not dare to even talk about debt to more than to in a very, very small portions. So therefore, we will have a sound system for a long time before the cycle turns around again. But until then, in between, there'll be a panic. There will be people will not have any money at all. People will, you talk about population or something. You talk about people will suffer. Of course, will be suffering. The world population has grown from about a billion in 1850 to 8 billion today. That's also an exponential growth because, it went to a billion. It took thousands of years before it slowly got up to a billion, and now it's 8 billion. That exponential, that's a spike straight up. Spikes never end well on a big sample. So I see world population coming down also, sadly. And, whether it comes down by 4 billion or i.e. half or whatever, I have no idea. But if I just look at it from a chart point of view, that it has to be a correction, whether that is economic circumstances, famine, war, vaccines, or whatever it is, social unrest, civil war, etc. We don't know, but I could see that, and also it'll be misery for a number of years if all of this happens that I'm forecasting. That in itself will mean that there will be less people born. So we will have a declining world population. And how quickly that happens will depend on, of course, what kind of disease or what kind of a war we get. But you took the Dark Ages, not the Dark Ages, well, we had the pest in Europe in the 1300s, and it was worldwide also. The population was estimated to go down by 50%. So, it's not unusual to see these kind of corrections in world population either. And as I said, we have enough reasons for it to happen. So there will be less people around. There will be less money around. And there will be new currency systems coming. Like I always ask it, because every currency always has gone to zero, which means there's always been a new currency issued. And I think it will be, again, a government currency, whether it will be digital or not, I don't know, but it won't be a printed one. I don't think they will go into debt because they will be scared stiff of actually having a debt-based system again when they just got out of one. That's what I see.
Okay. All right. We go through the panic. We go through the point where maybe, there isn't much money to go around, but then eventually some sort of sounder money comes out of it, not fiat, not debt-based, because people are so scarred from what debt created for them. And that's where, that's what's most likely to emerge, at least initially, on the other side of this thing. Wish we could get there without the panic and the tough times in the interim, but I'm not sure if humans are wired that way. All right. Well, look, so, you've got a relatively dire message, I guess, here for the general populace, which is, hey, look, we're going to have some troubling times ahead. Now let's get to the point where the individual has some agency in the story. They can't control what happens to the global pile of debt. They can't decide what the world governments and central planners decide to do, but they can basically put on their own oxygen masks first, right? So what would some of your recommendations be? I'm assuming getting some exposure to gold and silver, probably something you're going to recommend. True, and if so, what else above and beyond that?
Yes, well, obviously, I started our business now, which is called Matron Asset Management, or URL is called Switzerland, And started that just beginning of this century. For the simple reason that we started for ourselves and a few friends we were advising, that we saw these risks and we decided that we're still not gold bugs. We were just looking at the best way of protecting against the risks that I saw coming. And then, of course, you have to remember that 71 gold went from $35 to $850 in 1980. And then it slowly declined for 20 years to $250 in 1999. So when we went in, which was 2002, we were watching it for a while. And 2002, gold was $300. And then we went in and bought gold for ourselves and for the people we were advising at the time. So that was never meant as a business, but then people started asking us, can you help us too? Because we created a system with holding physical gold, you know, in your own name, no counterparty, then outside the banking system, in the safest vault, dealing directly with the refiners who are buying gold from them, et cetera. And then we set up a company based on that, and now there's a business that where we, you know, which is global, and we are probably the biggest when it comes to high net worth individuals holding physical gold outside the banking system. You know, one of our vaults is in the Swiss Alps, which is the biggest private gold vault in the world. So you know, we've done this gradually and slowly, but we have a passion for helping people to preserve wealth. Now, you could say that, okay, we cater for people who have a certain wealth. For example, our mountain vault is a minimum of 5 million, but you know, our other vaults are $400,000, still very high. But you know, there are other people, and we can recommend people who start much lower. And you know, you take Argentina. I meant Venezuela. It was Venezuela and the Bolivar. So people around 2000, they could have bought, the Bolivar was about the same as the dollar. They could have bought gold for nothing, basically. And that would have saved them today. And they could have just bought, a little bit. And that would have taken care of them and their family for a long time to come. I met somebody in a restaurant in the Italian part of Switzerland a couple of years ago. And he said, "I know you." I was, "Yeah, I know you." I told my friend, "You should listen to him. He's into gold." And he said, "Well," he said, he came from former Yugoslavia, this man, and he was the restaurant owner now." And he said, "I lived through the hyperinflation in Yugoslavia, and I had some gold. The rest of my family didn't. They lost everything, and I managed to get out of Yugoslavia and get buy a restaurant here in Switzerland." And you know, what I'm saying is that you don't have to be wealthy to put some of your money into gold. It can be grams of gold, or you know, fractions of ounces, or it can be ounces of silver, which costs today $25 for an ounce of silver. If you do that today, with the way I see the world developing and the currencies collapsing, that will save you and give you a nest egg which will last you for a long time when the crisis starts. So saving in gold and silver is for everyone, not just for the rich. You know, you could skip that last cup coffee that you buy at Costa Coffee, whatever, wherever you go, or the pack of cigarettes, or the last beer. You know, put it into put a little bit of silver, or a little bit of gold. So that's one way for people. For bigger investors, as I said, we help them to put it into the safest places. So that's an obvious way of protecting against the risks that we see today. And, you know, we went in 2000, I mean, gold in most currencies are up 7 to 8 times since 2000. And I think we have just seen the beginning of the rise of the precious metals. And I see the acceleration phase, and we don't care about the short-term moves. We don't look at the price short-term. We see how much gold we and our investors own, whether it's, you know, a gram or an ounce, whatever it is. That's what counts, not the daily price. It's irrelevant. You don't buy gold to make money. You buy gold and silver to protect your wealth and protect against the risks that now are greater than ever in history. That's how we see it. So that's what people should do. And put it away and just use a little bit of the savings or if they're more. You know, if you look at stocks against gold now, I think stocks will decline against gold by more than 95% in coming years. And silver will be poor man's gold. Silver will also go up dramatically, probably faster than gold, or probably twice as fast as gold. But silver is very volatile, and when it corrects also twice as fast. So it's not for widows and orphans, silver. A bit of silver is all right, but I think more gold. Gold is the king of the metals, and that's a much safer metal to hold. So that's clearly what people should do at any levels, and not just the wealthy people. Now, what else can people do? Well, of course, you can. You know, if you want to, but most people won't, you can buy a bit of food and dry food that lasts a number of years, etc., if you want, because there will be food shortages, there's no question about that, there will be people who will not get enough to eat, so have a bit of food, spare food will obviously be beneficial. But then I think the most important thing, Adam, because, as I said before, a lot of people will suffer. The most important thing is to help people, and if you have the ability, and that can be helping the elderly with shopping or whatever, or it can be helping people if you have a bit of spare money with cash. I mean, I see already now people around us suffering already. See, people actually who are now having problems making ends meet because prices, you know, inflation is not 3 or 4% in America. It's absolute nonsense, of course. You know, if people look at what they buy on a daily basis, food, etc., it's going up all the time. And therefore, you know, we have high inflation. And I believe that inflation will come back again. And I also believe, therefore, that interest rates will go up again. They might be down for the next 6 months or so, correcting. But the long trend of interest rates ended 2-3 years ago, the downtrend from 1980 to 2021 or so. And the longer trend is up of interest rates and up of inflation. So that's going to make it more difficult also for people. But as I said, helping family and friends is the most important thing you can do now. And when it comes to it, and I often say this, it's not, money is important. We need money to have a bit of food and a roof over our heads. But then, you know, there are so many things in life that are free. Friendship, obviously, family, music, nature, sports, books, etc. You know, there's so many things we don't need for, you know, one iPad, one phone, and three cars, etc., etc. We don't need all of that. You know, I remember. I remember growing up in the 50s. All housewives worked. Husbands earned a fraction of obviously what they earn today. And car was exceptional to have, and we all managed. But now everybody spends so much money on things that we don't really need. And I think the good thing about bad times coming is we get back to real values again. The transition will be very, very difficult and hard, but at least we come back to, again, the family becoming the kernel of society, because we will need each other and we will need close friends. And you know, that's a positive effect of all this, the horrible things I see happening. Life is all about having a close family and friends, but sadly it's been forgotten about in this monetary capitalistic era that we're in now. But as I said, I think coming back to that will be good for the world, and sadly we will have to suffer a bit to get to that point.
Well, very well said, Egon. I've talked a lot on this channel about, a few things. One, I've been asking a lot of my recent guests for a non-monetary investment they would encourage people to adopt in their lives. I think you just gave your answer there, which is one of the best ones, I think, which is investing in community, investing in the relationships that matter to you. Folks here on this channel have heard me mentioned often centenarian advice, which is if you go on YouTube and you type in centenarian advice, you get interviews with people who live to be over 100, and they ask them, you know, okay, you've done life, what matters? And what's interesting is they always say the same three things, and the number one is always relationships, which you just brought up. We're social creatures at the end of the day, and the quality of the relationships that we have in our life, those are the things that we really value when we're at the end and reflecting back on what really mattered most. So you're giving great validation to that. I also just want to underscore for folks too, Egon is a very successful man. He is a man who understands the benefits of what wealth can bring, financial wealth can bring, but also its limitations. And I think the fact, Egon, that you are placing such a preeminence on just good values and family and relationships speaks more than anything I could ever say about it. So thank you for being
can,
so direct.
Can I just mention something here?
Sure.
A good friend of mine in the gold industry was Jim Sinclair, who was called Mr. Gold during his lifetime. Amen. He had more knowledge of gold than all the experts together in the world today. And so I had the privilege of knowing him and meeting him several times. And once I sent him a photo of my family and grandchildren, and he wrote back to me and said that, you know, that's more worth than all the gold in the world, he said. And I agree with that, absolutely. You know, family and friendship, that's what makes life fantastic. You know, okay, we have to have money enough for food, etc., and for a roof. But you know, if we understand the real value of relationships, as you also pointed out, you know, that's what makes life worth living more than anything else.
All right. Well, look, in wrapping up here, Egon, I could keep going for hours here with you. So we touched on this really briefly, but just very quickly, I'd like to get your full answer on it if we haven't gotten already, which is totally hear you that you don't buy gold to become rich. You buy gold to protect your wealth from all the things that we've been talking about. That said, gold, as we're talking here, is really back trading at pretty close to its all-time highs. There's a lot of talk about gold perhaps having a very good year ahead of it here for a number of different reasons. Do you believe that the world is perhaps starting to get the memo of the issues that you've talked about here? And if so, what do you think that's going to do to the price of gold from here?
Yes, I think, number one, as you said, and as I've been saying, gold is for wealth preservation, not for short-term gains or trading. And our people who invest through us, they are buyers of gold, not sellers. Some people put all their money into gold, so therefore they sell off a bit when they need it. But I think gold will not just preserve your wealth in coming years. It's not just next year. We're talking about many, many years, you know. Gold is going to enhance your wealth dramatically in coming years also, because we have now had a very long period of gold being kept at a very low level. And I think the next era now of gold starting to run away is probably starting in 2024, and probably in a bigger way. Not that I care about the prices, as I said, but I think that's likely to happen. But, you know, as regards the gold price, when we started, I think I said that I go around 2000, 2, 3, 4, 5. I said gold will probably reach 10,000 in today's money, I said then. And you know, so that's, but now I don't make any forecasts, because it is totally meaningless to make a forecast of the gold price in a currency that goes to zero or goes down. So, you know, tell me the what one dollar will buy instead in 5 years' time. You know, you could measure gold in or in chickens or whatever. That would be better than in dollars. But at least you have something stable also that you can eat. But therefore, don't look at the gold price. I'm not going to give a forecast in gold. All I'm telling you is that in the money that you value everything in, gold will go up to levels that no one can believe today, because the value of your money will go down dramatically. And that's what counts. And that's why you're holding gold, not to make money, but to protect against fiat money that is going to have no value in coming years.
All right. Well, very well said. All right. Well, in wrapping up here, Egon, for folks that have really enjoyed this conversation, maybe this is their first time getting to meet you, where can they go to follow you and your work?
So we have our website, which is goldswitzerland.com, goldswitzerland.com. And that's where we have, all about, of course, what we do for people, and also articles and interviews that we do, especially this Matt Pippenberg and myself. Matt is absolutely superb in talking about these things, also about the world economy and gold. And so we're very, very fortunate to have him on our team. I think people who want to understand what's happening in the world from a financial point of view, economic point of view, and how that relates to money and gold, I think they will get a lot out of going to our website, goldswitzerland.com, to see some of our work.
Okay, great. And Egon, when I edit this, I will put up the link to Gold Switzerland right here on the screen, so folks know exactly where to go. Folks, I'll put a link in the description too, so you can get a one-click access there if you want. All right, well, look, just in wrapping up here, if you've enjoyed this conversation with Egon, would like for him to come back on the channel again at some point in 2024 to give us an update on where he sees things, please let him know that by hitting the like button, then clicking on the red subscribe button below, as well as that little bell icon right next to it. And just in quickly wrapping up here, if you've got a little bit more stamina in you folks, it's always great to tap the expertise of folks like Egon, who have been in the markets, been following the macro story for their long careers, have seen a lot of different cycles, and really have that expertise. If you'd like to hear from one other person who fits that bill, just released an interview with Jim Rogers. I'll put up a link to that right here. You can watch that after this one if you like. Egon, I can't thank you enough. It's been a great conversation. Really have enjoyed meeting you for the first time. Best 2024s for you. And like I said, I'd love to have you back on the channel again later this year.
Thank you, Adam. I really enjoyed talking to you also. I always considered you as be one of the best in what you're doing, and having talked to you today, I understand why, and it was a pleasure talking to you, and we wish everybody well, and obviously Happy New Year, but happy in the way that if you think about the things that we just said now, that will make it happy, rather than to be worried about what's happening. People, if you focus on the right things, we can always do something about our own situation. We can't do anything about the world, but we certainly can have an influence on our own lives, and that's what we should focus on.
All right. Well, very well said. Thank you so much, my friend. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching.